This is Danny and Gallant, live from Peoria all this week on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Try to put on a show.
It is Danny and Gallant from Peoria. Before we get to around the NFL and try and figure out what in the world is going on with their collective bargaining agreement, Jerry DePoto, in talking about this group, you get the sense that we're seeing the players that they believe are going to be responsible for the turnaround, that are going to be the nucleus of the next winning team. And last year, you had a vague idea of who they were. You weren't seeing them, not in the same way. So to hear Jerry say that hey, this is, last year was a transitional year, and these are the guys that we believe are going to be part and are going to be added to with the nucleus of their team going forward. That's really exciting to me, because as a rebuild, we should have different tiers of rebuilding. There's what the Astros did, and that was before the trash can banging, where the Astros essentially
stunk
for 3 years, in which they moved anything they had that was major league ready, capable of playing at the major leagues, for whatever they could get. They gutted their major league product, and they looked out and said, we're going to try to win 5 to 6 years from now. That is not what the Mariners did.
No.
What the Mariners did was they said that, we think that the group we have, we're competing for a wild card spot. We're not really capable of winning the division. Not with the Astros here. We're not even ahead of the Angels. And the A's.
For the A's,
tend,
right.
The A's have a better young nucleus than we do. And so they said, we're gonna pivot. We're going to look to how can we get a group of young players that come through together that make an impact. And they settled on that they thought they still had things of value at the major league level that they could turn and get assets. And honestly, they've kind of done that. It's not to the studs rebuilding process. It was, we're going to take what we have that's valuable and move it to try and get younger and better and believe that we'll have more of an upside and a higher possibility. There's a risk that comes with that. When you decide you're going to get worse at the major league level, there's no guarantee that you're going to be better 2 to 3 years down the road. There's no guarantee that this group is going to be able to work out. But I think that we've seen the benefits of that. They've gone from having one of the worst farm systems in baseball to having what is regarded as one of the best. And that should be, is that a guarantee for success? No. But it is, and you can evaluate the merits of this rebuilding project on what happens really in the second half of this season and going forward. If we get to 2022 and they're still not good, if they're not in the conversation and not contending for a division, then you can say that this rebuilding process or this retooling, this step back, didn't work. You can't. Anybody who's saying that now is like, oh, get out of here. No, conceptually, they've pulled off. They've pulled it off and given themselves a nucleus of young talent that, if these players turn out to be as good as they think they will, that should lead them to contention.
So you're starting, you mean by the beginning of 2022, the end of the 2021 season, or do you mean the end of the 2022 season?
They should be better the second half of this season than they are the first half. This team should be better as it finishes than they start.
What does that mean for next year?
And next year, I think that they should be a team that, and depending on how the playoff format looks then, they should be a team that's in the conversation. They shouldn't be a team that starts out with, well, you know, it's really another year before. They should be a team that maybe it's too early for them, and maybe they're not ready to peak, and maybe they're not able to compete at that level. But if you get to the start of 2022 and we're still in this spot of, like, we'll see how it goes, then it'll be like, well, you didn't play this right. You didn't play this right, because that's when that group should be starting to enter its prime. That's when this group should be starting to, if they're as good as you hope they are, If Julio Rodriguez and Jared Kelenic are possibly franchise-changing type players, that's where you should be getting the traction. They should be one of the most exciting teams in baseball. They should be one of the teams that people are talking about. So I would say that that's the timeline that you put on it. I saw a text that came in about you hold Jerry DePoto responsible for the last 4 years. The first 3 years they were here, they followed a different format. And I won't say that it didn't get them in the playoffs, but they were a winning team. And they were, over the breadth of that time, they had one of the best records of any team not to make the playoffs in there. I don't know, it wasn't the right approach because it didn't get them over the hump, but they made the calculation that with what we have, we can win with this group at the major league level. And they won. They didn't win enough. But even if they had made a wild card there and lost a one-game play-in, would everybody have felt better about this? It would have ended the postseason drought. I don't think that would have been significant. I think they made the right decision to take a step back.
And it wouldn't have really ended the postseason drought either, because we're both of the belief, right, that the play-in game is not really a playoff game,
not
right?
Really. Yeah. It's not making the playoffs. And look, you want a shot to win a World Series. Was this team going to win the World Series any point in the first 3 years of DePoto's regime?
No.
Not with Felix pitching the way he was. If Felix had gotten back to being dominant, then maybe you've got a shot, but not with Felix pitching the way he was.
How do you feel about when you see Baseball Prospectus and the rankings of farm systems? How much stock do you buy into it? Because it's one of the fascinating parts about baseball is that with basketball, you see the guys who are playing in college. In football, you see the guys who are playing in college. You have a very good feel for what's next. Baseball, it is entirely a fog of war, essentially, until you get these guys up at the major league level. And you can be told someone's good and someone's bad. And I used to get into it with Prospects Twitter, which is this group of people that act like the prospects that you have are holier than everything that anyone else could have. And I think this is not unique to like any fan base. Every fan base thinks that their prospects are basically like the most valuable chips that you could possibly have.
There is an entire segment of baseball fans who are obsessed with prospects and ranking those people and see the prospect rankings as the ultimate desired goal. And it's the same type of people. It's the exact same subset of species as the draft efficient, the draftniks who are just fixated. And it's people that are captivated by potential. I think prospect rankings and farm system rankings give you an idea about how a franchise has accumulated value. I think that a good contending franchise needs to have and will inevitably have guys that were very highly regarded prospects, because a good team is going to have stars. I don't think that it necessarily determines having a great number of prospects dictates that you're going to be a great team. You can have a great farm system and it never pays off in the major leagues. And I think a lot of that has to do with culture and leadership. You need to be able to fill in guys. The world needs ditch diggers too, as Judge Snails once said. And baseball teams need people, and they need a culture that's able to get all of that talent to work together. I don't think you can have a great team without having great prospects some point along the way. It doesn't mean that that's the only ingredient, but that has to be part of the ingredient. And look, that's why having two top 10 prospects in the game right now, in Jared Kelenic and Julio Rodriguez, is important for the Mariners, because they need stars. And having two guys like that doesn't guarantee either one of them will become stars. But they've got the ability to. And Kyle Lewis, that's the question, probably the biggest uncertainty I have. I hope Yusei Kikuchi and Justice Sheffield bounce back this year. That's my hope. My biggest question, and sort of, can Kyle Lewis be a star? Is Kyle, when they drafted him, they thought he could be a star. And I'm not sure what the trajectory is on him. But if he can be a star, that gives them a head start on this rebuilding process.
I'm skeptical of the pitchers. I just have a hard time believing that changing your mechanics all of a sudden. And you know what? Jerry laid out when he was on with us all the things that Kikuchi went through this past season. And you know what? To Kikuchi's credit, that was a lot of stuff to go through. And
I think baseball, his father before the season began.
Right. He was moving. He was changing countries. Baseball is one of those sports too where it's different. Like you're just constantly playing. Like you don't really get any away time or anything like that. So maybe with him, but with Lewis. And maybe I'm biased because I went to his first game and I saw him in a home run off of Trevor Bauer. But when you see someone in his first game that's going up against one of the better pitchers in baseball and is not scared and takes him deep, I don't know how much stock I should put into that. But that's one of those moments where, I mean, you have that happen right away. How confident are you feeling then? And then after an offseason where you're like actually going to be on the major league roster, you're got to be feeling great right now. So I'm in on the Kyle Lewis talk. We'll see how it goes, obviously. But if there was someone that I was picking right now of, like, could he be, like, in that sort of tween phase, yeah, I think he's it.
See the rest of the pitching, and I think that is the question, where the arm's going to come from.
That's
and
a great question.
They have minor league pitchers that are coming up. We'll see Logan Gilbert a little bit later this week. Sheffield is obviously not a candidate, but someone you expect to see in the rotation. You say Kikuchi. The thing that was so surprising about Kikuchi is that he had, we talk about the uncertainty of prospects, Japanese pitchers coming to the major leagues is not nearly as much of a crapshoot. Like, you should have a fairly reasonable, like, expecting, expecting Kikuchi to be better than he was last year was not a reach, because all of his track record in Japan said that you should expect that, and the history and success of pitchers making that transition. So that's why it was a little discouraging in which you're looking at it. You're like, wait, I started out thinking that this guy could maybe be a number two starter on a really good rotation, and that's not what we're seeing at all. We're seeing sort of a bottom of the rotation type pitcher. So I was really encouraged hearing him throw 94, 95, 96 yesterday. I think that's a great sign.
Do you think he'll always be a starter? Because I think sometimes you look at these guys and you wonder, when you got that kind of velocity and you've shown that you can change it so quickly, that maybe there's another spot for you. And I think that's one of the good things about having a team that's so young. Everyone's sort of a blank canvas. You can do a lot of different things, I think, with all of these guys, but you expect him to be a starter by the night.
They need him to be a starter, because they need, you can patch together a bullpen. You can be, and the bullpen is the thing that is the least projectable from year to year. Like,
definitely,
there's the most variance. You could piece together a bullpen. You need starting arms. And the Astros probably show that better than any other team with what they've been able to get out of their starters.
But they also, I mean, they got guys from out of town. I mean, all of the guys that have been real difference makers, it was Justin Verlander. It was trading basically peanuts for Gerrit Cole. It was trading peanuts for Zach Greinke. I mean, they have a lot of top-of-the-line guys, and Dallas Keuchel overachieved with them. He was never the most flashy pitcher. He was just great with his location, kept the ball down, and got a lot of ground ball outs and stuff. All of a sudden, that sort of slowed down the pitches that he was throwing, and then people started yakking him. That's why he left, or why they let him walk. But I don't know how they get those guys, and that's the somewhat concerning part. Do you sign them? Are you going to be trading guys for them when you eventually do turn the corner and you have all these young, position players on the field? I wonder. I really do, because, I mean, right now, yeah, best case scenario, I think you have a bunch of guys that could be like your three starter.
The Astros showed that if you get a group of young players that are affordable and cost controlled, you can then make the additions that put you over the top from out of town. You can put together those assets, and the Mariners should have a war chest when they get there. The Mariners should have, if they get good with this group, they should have a war chest to be able to make those sort of additions and go to a team that, like, hey, you're not going anywhere with this elite pitcher. We'll take his salary. We'll take that on. You should be able to make additions because you become one of the haves, and that your budget allows you to do that. You should have a war chest, but they also need some of their own developed arms to come through. It is Danny and Gallant. We are here in Peoria. It's a gorgeous day. The Mariners are going to be taking on the Cubs a little bit later. Our own Dave Ross. Wait, it's not our own Dave Ross, is it?
No.
It's David Ross. David Ross is the Cubs' new manager, not Dave Ross.
Little Davey Ross.
Of 97.3 Cairo FM, though. Dave Ross, our Dave Ross, did throw out an opening pitch last year, which we heard no end of.
Did he tow the rubber?
He did. He towed the slab for the hometown nine. Our spring training coverage is brought to you by Alaska Airlines. It's now time to go around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. Brought to you by Toyota of Puyallup. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
Jess.
Here we are. Talking NFL in the 75-degree weather.
Sorry, I was distracted by Julio Rodriguez walking out to the field.
He's bigger.
He's a big dude.
Just Google
Julio and Nelson Cruz. There's a great photo of them standing next to each other, and Julio looks bigger than Nelson Cruz.
Yeah, Julio's a big dude.
That's crazy. Well, I would have expected the opposite. I thought it would have been like a DK Tyler Lockett situation in that picture. He's just, I don't know, for some reason I didn't expect him to be that big.
Yeah, he's square.
It's around the NFL.
Looks like he's built out of Legos.
I'm really getting
that's what I always think of, like when you see like a really solid, like that dude is a square built human.
I always think it's like a transformer. They've got like the long arms and big shoulders.
Yeah. I'm getting a kick out of this because like both Danny and Jess are just looking over to the field, and they're like, their jaws are on the floor as they look at Julio Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Well, these are, you know, young athletes in the best shapes of their lives. I'm just jealous.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely write me down as Julio Rodriguez fan.
8 feet tall. Amazing.
If he was a foot, he was eight. It's, okay, around the NFL, the Seahawks hire Elliott Smith and Alonzo Highsmith, formerly of
the
Cleveland Browns.
That's a great sign. I think this comes John Dorsey.
I'm sorry, Elliott Wolf. I said Elliott Wolf. It's Elliott. Sorry. I said Elliott Smith. It's Elliott Wolf.
Elliott Wolf.
My bad.
And Alonzo Highsmith, both guys that come from John Dorsey's front office in Cleveland. John Dorsey is a very good friend of John Schneider's. He also, Elliott Wolf, is the son of Ron Wolf, who was John Schneider's mentor.
Very anti-analytics this offseason was Ron Wolf, too, right when Elliott lost his job with the Browns. I don't know if you saw that story. He was like, rah! Sort of the old man yelling at a crowd from that side of things. Does that mean that the Seahawks are sort of going away from things of that nature? I mean, it seems like they're bringing in guys with the old school approach.
Yes, I think John Schneider has always been. There's some things that the Seahawks are very progressive in, and I think training and treating injuries are two of those things. There are other things that they are very much, you tell and look at the guys. And your eyes are what tell you about the prospects. And I think the Seahawks are very much of that opinion when it comes to evaluating players.
Colorado Buffaloes have a new head coach. They've named former Dolphins assistant Carl Durrell as their new head coach.
Yeah!
Do you want to hear the meanest thing? Carl Durrell is an exceptionally nice guy. He is so boring. I think he's the most boring human that I've come across.
The most?
Yeah, he's pretty boring. Carl Durrell is an extremely boring coach, which is maybe what you want in Colorado, but I would think you want somebody that glitz to shine it up. Like, Colorado seems like it's one of those teams, schools that should be a really good football school. Really hasn't been. Really hasn't been for quite a while.
I think you need to bring in somebody that really fits that Boulder vibe. Because if you can sell a student athlete on Boulder, which is not that hard of a sell,
no,
you should be able to get guys that come there. If you can sell them that, look, this is a fun time, man. Come here. You're going to have a good old time.
Is Rick Neuheisel the best Colorado coach? Is he the best coach for that school? Like, is he the one that's fit most? Because they've gone through a lot of dudes. They've gone through Dan Hawkins. It's the Big 12. It's Division I football. Go play intramurals. They've gone through kind of the hardos, as you would say. They went with Mel Tucker last year, who had a lot of momentum built up, and then they just couldn't pony up the money to keep him. And now they've got an exceptionally boring human.
Yeah, that's not going to work. That's not going to work. It's a shame. I mean, they were a powerhouse in the mid-90s. One of my old coworkers in Houston, Ted Johnson, played for those teams. Like, they were really, really good. And I feel like that program is always going to have some sneaky potential. But I also think, too, like, if you're in the Pac-12, this is who's being brought in. Man, that's underwhelming.
Ben Roethlisberger has resumed throwing footballs.
Has he started showering?
I don't believe so.
Has he stopped eating?
Definitely not.
Oh, now we're going to become the fat shaming show.
He looks like a talking sandwich.
I have no problem.
Oh, you guys.
I have no problem shaming Ben Roethlisberger.
Me neither. No, he hasn't stopped eating at all. Definitely not on a diet. I don't know how many calories throwing a football burns, but it's not enough.
I wonder how good he's going to be this coming season because, I mean, that's a serious injury. He's up there in age. It's an elbow. And, I mean, he missed the whole season with it.
I give you a choice between three quarterbacks, and you need to tell me which one you take for next season. Tom Brady, Philip Rivers, Ben Roethlisberger. All three guys are going to be in the Hall of Fame when all is said and done.
Maybe with Philip.
I think he ends up in there just because of the volume of stats. They're all kind of, you could make a case for each one. Which ones are you taking? You can only choose one. Who do you choose for next season?
I mean, come on. Tom Brady.
That's sentiment speaking over, because if we're talking about performance.
Is it entirely sentiment? I mean, who do you think is going to work out the hardest this offseason? Is it going to be Tom Brady? Is it going to be Ben Roethlisberger? Or is it going to be Philip Rivers, who is the father of a small army of children?
Roethlisberger, I believe, is the youngest. Rivers has got to be kept on his toes by having all them kids, right? Plus, if he gets into a good situation, maybe he finds, like, sort of rejuvenated after years being wasted with the Chargers. I think Brady's the last one I'd take.
Wow. I cannot stand that man out of sheer respect, hatred, and I would take him.
Yeah, no. Brady would be the last of those three that I would choose.
Player reps are divided about the 17-game proposed game.
What the hell is going on here?
I don't know. I'm confused. Someone needs to make a flowchart. Like, John was answering a question that we asked this morning, and I just got lost, like, about 3 seconds into it. I have no idea where
it was
going.
It sounded like there was a 50-50 chance on everything.
So, right. Here's what we know, is that the owners have put forward a CBA proposal that they've been negotiating with the union. The player reps, the executive council, so there's 11 players, two-thirds of those player reps on the executive council need to accept it for that to be ratified. They don't have it right now. It's 6-5. So they don't have the two-thirds. That would mean it goes to a vote of the entire union, at which point you'd need 50% or more to accept it, to be able to have. You'd need a majority of players to say yes to accept the deal that's in front of them. John said that DeMorris Smith negotiated this deal and is okay with it. Maybe it's a case that the NFL owners are saying, because I haven't seen anything from DeMorris Smith saying, hey, this is what... I think what must be happening is that the NFL owners have said, this is the best offer you're going to get from us. And if you don't accept this, and if you don't accept it by this, before the start of the new league year, the deal's off the table, you won't ever see anything like this again, and we're done negotiating with you. And so the Players Association feels that the players need to decide it based on that information. I don't know if this is a case of the NFLPA, and by that I mean the union executives and DeMorris Smith, thinking that, hey, this is the good deal, that this is the best deal we're going to get, and they say we're not going to see anything for another year, so you guys better decide. It's very strange.
It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. The big names seem to be in opposition to it.
Yes.
We've seen Tyler Lockett. We've seen Richard Sherman. We've seen J.J. Watt. I think Russell Wilson liked a tweet of one of those three as well in confirmation of being against said proposal by the NFL. But if it's down to 50-50... Yeah, the stars are going to feel a certain way. How are the average players, the borderline roster players, going to vote? I feel like there's a very good chance it would pass. If it's just a 50% vote, that's all you need? I feel like there's a very good chance that this thing would pass just based off of all the people that are down on the bottom end of the NFL.
That is around the NFL. Danny and Gallant, we are here in Peoria. A couple more things to get through. We had Jerry DePoto on with us earlier. Things that we're most excited to see is the Mariners are out taking batting practice before their game against the Chicago Cubs a little bit later today in the Cactus League.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
The difference between last year with the Mariners and this year, it's more significant than you might expect, because while we knew the Mariners were making a transition last year, we didn't see it in the big league camp. Not like you're seeing it this year. Jay Bruce was here. Edwin Encarnacion was here. They had a number of players who, looking at it, you knew did not factor in to the long run. And now you look at this team and how it's built, and there are some familiar names. Marco Gonzalez is still part of the rotation. Kyle Seager's here. But for the most part, the guys that we're seeing out there are guys that this franchise believes are going to be cogs or have a chance to be cogs in a contender in the future.
Yeah, and that's good that they're here now. And it's good that you're actually seeing some of these results in front of you. And hopefully these guys make the most of whatever opportunities that they have up here or down here. And I'm really curious to see a lot of guys in particular. I really want to focus on Evan White. This is a guy that everyone we look at and we know the guy could field, but we talk about what you need to be as a corner infielder these days. It's not about fielding. It's about power. It's about what are you doing to create runs at a very, very quick pace, like we were talking about earlier this morning. And I wonder about it with him. I mean, we were talking about it with Jerry, and Jerry suggested, look, this is a guy that we think can hit doubles, and we'll see about the home run side of things. I would say of all the things that we talked about with him, that was the one where I was like, okay, I'm not really, not necessarily feeling that that's going to be a strength of Evan White based off of what I'm hearing. Obviously what I see is going to be probably something different entirely, but that's where I'm at on that side of things.
It's Danny and Gallant, and Jerry DePoto, when he was asked in cut number 6 about that transition, what we're seeing that's different this year, his answer was, we're seeing elements of what they believe this team will look like going forward.
Last year we had a transition team, and we knew that. We had a lot of veteran players that were building a bridge toward this young group. And, you know, we've been really conscious of trying to grab as much talent as we could while not rushing them and giving them the opportunity to grow at their own pace. So, you know, last year you saw guys like Jay Bruce and Edwin Encarnacion and Domingo Santana. And, you know, we really didn't see those players as a part of the core of our next competitive championship team. And we do see this group as that, as the foundation. And you just named just a few of them. And now that they are here and they are the centerpiece, they're not coming into play in the fifth and sixth inning, but you're seeing Evan White's and Jake Fraley's and Kyle Lewis, et cetera, from the very start. You're seeing J.P. Crawford and Shed Long, who know they're going to play together every day. It's exciting to see them grow.
That idea of how you develop talent is one of the things I'm most fascinated with in baseball. You asked about prospect rankings. Prospect rankings are indications of how a player's the way a player is seen, his potential. And I think that the challenge for a franchise is how quickly can you refine that potential and get the most out of it at the big league level. For years, we saw the Mariners, quote-unquote, rush players to the big leagues. And the rationale, which I can't fault it, was there was nobody better than them in front of them. You don't keep a guy in double A because, well, he needs more time in double A. You would tend to think that you rise to the level that you're the best option at a specific rung. If you're the second best catcher prospect in the franchise, if you're the second best, most capable guy, like, you should be catching every day in AAA. I don't care if you've only been in there. The result, though, was guys like Mike Zunino and Dustin Ackley, and maybe they would have busted no matter what had happened, but that guys got to the big leagues and they weren't able to get out of slumps. They weren't able to correct themselves when things went wrong. And I think that question of can you spoil a prospect by rushing him, I think you can.
Did you get the vibe that those were the results of rushing guys?
I believe so. I think so.
Interesting.
I think that that's what happened. I think especially with Zunino, he was going to strike out a ton anyway. But I think that because of how quickly he came up, and he had about 500 minor league at-bats. And that guy was a former college, a Golden Spikes College Player of the Year. He's a great prospect coming out of Florida. And maybe that would have happened anyway. Maybe that flaw would have been exposed. But I think that when you – everybody who's that talented is going to have the ability to hit well in stretches. But what's really going to define them is how quickly they can get out of ruts. And Zunino would fall into ruts that he was never able to get out of.
We have this conversation about quarterbacks all the time. When is too soon? I'm of the belief that it's never too soon. I think if a player is going to succeed, there will at the very least be signs, and they're going to have to weather the storm and get through it. And sometimes you put these guys up and you put them in these big spots, and it just isn't for them.
What about David Carr? Because I always wonder this, and maybe Carr would have been bad no matter what, but Carr was put into an expansion franchise, and he got sacked mercilessly. And it wasn't the kind of sacks that Russell Wilson takes.
It was like record amounts of sacks
like
every year.
He was just getting beaten. He had
70
no shot.
Times one season.
I think he could have been a great quarterback, and he still might have fallen in. Because for a quarterback, it's the clock in your head. Once you lose the clock in your head, once you start doubting your protection, you're toast, right? Once you start, if you get to the point where you no longer expect to have, a quarterback has to expect that I'm going to have 2.5 seconds to be able to make this throw. And once you lose that, it doesn't matter how good you are anymore, because your mechanics are going to be a mess because you're not going to trust your protection.
That's part of it. Having talked to people in the organization with the Texans, it wasn't all that. and that's not necessarily to reflect poorly on who David Carr was, but you know, some players just have that killer, I'm going to outwork everybody kind of mentality, and you need that out of a quarterback in particular, and he just didn't have it. He was not the first guy to show up. It was a little bit different, and I bet in retrospect that he wishes he maybe had changed that approach.
Do you think you can spoil a player by rushing him to the big leagues? Like, if you've got a player like Kelenic right now, who is he played in some double A last year, we're probably going to see him at the big league level this year. We're not sure exactly when. Could you spoil him by accelerating him too fast?
Well, what would the harm be in accelerating him fast? That would be my question in response to that, because I feel like he's very confident in his own ability. So shouldn't he have the opportunity to test said confidence, and maybe his confidence gets shaken a little bit? But honestly, I think that would make him work harder so that he can get back and be at a good level.
The counter argument would be you could cost him his confidence, because if you throw him and put him in a situation where he's not getting any success, you might undermine, or he's getting significantly less success than he was used to, and he's just not prepared, he doesn't have sort of the track record of at-bats, and he hasn't gone through significant slumps in the minor leagues where he doesn't know if he's ever going to hit again, and then he's able to work his way out of it. The next time he goes into a slump, if it's at a higher level against better competition, he'll be more prepared to get out of it than he would be if he just gets thrown into the major leagues. That the one thing, when you're going bad in the major leagues, it's going to be harder to get it out because you're going against guys that are have better stuff. And the guys that don't have better stuff have a better understanding of what it's going to be harder for you to get out of those, and you can erode and evaporate that confidence.
That's certainly true. I think, though, if it's going to happen anywhere where the confidence gets tested, shouldn't it happen at the highest level as opposed to at a lower level? Because it can happen at a lower level as well. I think that just competition tends to bring the best out in us, and it also tends to show us who maybe we need to make different plans for in the future. And I would say, in particular for a young prospect, if you get a glimpse and get to see what he is at the major league level, I suppose maybe that hurts his value a little bit. But at the very least, if you see a guy come up and he struggles for a little bit, you know, all right, well, we got to move in another direction. I think you get answers a little bit more quickly in a sport where you do have to be patient. And I understand the idea of patience, but I'm not going to lie. I want to see Jared up here. I want to see Julio up here. I want to see them both playing.
I believe, and I would agree. I'm looking forward, and I think we are going to see Kelenic at some point this year, which at that point he is flying through minor league baseball. It's not like he's being held back and like, nope, you're going to play just right. High A this year. But the second part, I think in the major leagues, you're more equipped to come out of a slump if you've also gotten out of a slump in AAA, and you've also gotten out of a slump in AA.
That makes sense.
That you're just equipped with that history of understanding, because that is a skill, understanding how to get out of a bad stretch of road, understanding how to get yourself back on track.
Even just knowing you can.
Yes, and knowing that, hey, this too shall pass, and yes, I feel like I'm crummy right now, but I feel like I felt like this a couple years ago when I went 32 at-bats without getting a hit when I was down in Arkansas, and that changed. So this is going to change as well. And that when you make it in the big leagues where it's that much harder because you're going up, you can throw a guy in, and if he doesn't have the skill or that repeated he doesn't have the history to draw upon of him getting himself out of a slump, it can be a problem or a challenge. It is Danny and Gallant. We are coming up next. It's time for us to throw flags, maybe pick a few up, and perhaps raise one.
From the pocket, and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
I think that there is a daily flag that can be thrown on the Houston Astros.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, should it be raised? Like, the ability that they've had to generate a considerable amount of emotion out of what is a fairly straightforward cheating scandal is pretty remarkable. Like, it takes some work to turn something that happened a month ago into a daily talking point.
It takes a remarkable amount of indifference. And it's funny because they're so indifferent to it and they're trying to move on, and they clearly don't get that no one is going to let this one just end.
If we don't let them boo us, if we send out only our minor league players for a spring training game, if we take away all the signs, that's going to stop people from being mad at us, right?
They took the very millennial approach to apologies, which is, it's over once I apologize. Oh, yeah, everything's fine now because I apologized, right? Because I said that I was sorry, so you have to move on because I'm moving on.
Offense, but it's like, I said I'm sorry, it just washes it away. I said
I'm
no
sorry
offense.
Sorry you were
so
offended?
Yeah.
There's an expression in baseball that I particularly love where they say you're going to have to wear it. Usually used with you have to just accept getting hit by a pitch. You're going to have to wear that one. But it means that, yeah, that's probably not going to be pleasant for you. And there's nothing you're going to be able to do about it, and you just have to accept it. The Astros are going to have to wear this for a while, and their refusal to wear it is only going to make them have to wear it longer.
Yeah, I kind of keep hope they do it. I hope they keep doing it.
Yeah, from a content perspective, I love it.
Every single day, it's like a new wrinkle. I mean, how do you outdo yourselves tomorrow, Astros? Please, try. What could you do?
Asking for silence before every at-bat.
Yes.
Like, it's a golf teeing off. Like, yes. No booing.
please. Quiet in the crowd.
We should come up with a theoretical thing they could do to keep this going every single day. Thank you, Astros.
It could always get worse. Lydia, do you have any flags today?
I'm going to raise a flag for all of us here participating on the show today, because nothing ever goes quite smoothly in radio. That's one of the fun things about it. It's just, that's live radio for you, and you just have to roll with the punches. It's kind of like being on an improv team. And so I just want to raise a flag for all of you guys, because just rolling with it this morning as we work through a couple of technical difficulties, and everybody listening as well. Because that's just radio for you, but it also makes it incredibly fun.
I also would like to raise a flag for Lydia's intro to the show, which I really enjoyed. It was fantastic. It was wonderful.
Sing it.
Nobody
loud.
Wants to hear that.
No, it's not true. That's not true.
I mean, just like the Astros, now we want more of it, Lydia.
I'll bring a trash can tomorrow, just in case it happens again.
I saw a TikTok video where somebody did it. An Astros-themed video to the Phil Collins song.
Yes, I saw that.
Which was really weird.
It's fantastic.
Paul.
Well, first off, I do have to throw a flag on myself. I underestimated the sun, so we're going to see how red I am tomorrow.
You missed it last week. Paul explained how he's usually really good about applying
sunscreen.
There's
nowhere to hide.
It's like, this is a really, really great... I then threatened to put lotion in his sunscreen.
Not cool. That's cancer.
Tanning oil.
Oh, it's cancer.
It could cause cancer.
It's been fine for people for generations.
I'm going to throw a flag on LeBron James here. Remember when LeBron James sued Alabama for using the shop, which is honestly something that could be applied to a variety of different things because of his HBO show? Well, which is not a good show, by the way. Whatever. That's not the point. A youth group has claimed that LeBron James jacked their, quote, more than an athlete slogan for his Uninterrupted brand. And now they want more than $33 million to make things right, because they apparently claim that LeBron James saw them wearing these on T-shirts at a basketball game that they all were in attendance for. And they are suing for $33 million. Just a little hypocrisy from old LeBron James.
Now, I'll be very interested. Did the youth basketball team file for a trademark? Because if that's the case, they might have a very strong foundation for it.
They obtained the trademark in 2018. They started using the slogan, "I am more than an athlete," since 2016.
Interesting. Yeah. When did LeBron start using it, does it say?
It does not say when LeBron started using it, but they claim that at a Cleveland Cavaliers-Washington Wizards game in 2017 that they were wearing the More Than an Athlete shirt, and that they assumed that he saw the shirts then and took it for himself.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Classic LeBron.
LeBron can do no wrong.
Although, you know what? Let's talk about
a few things.
Like, isn't it kind of cheesy to try to trademark if you're a youth basketball team more than an athlete?
Yes.
Like, that's kind of cheesy.
Listen, I'm bitter over LeBron James' game-winning shot over the Celtics yesterday. So, let me have it. Let me have this.
The dream shake?
That was not a dream shake.
He did the dream shake.
It was a fadeaway.
Dream shake.
Oh, I did the dream shake. That's what he said afterwards. God,
I love LeBron James so much. I love him.
Jess.
Yes.
Your flag.
I was going to throw a flag at the technology issues, but I'm actually not going to, because Lydia's was better. Thank you, everyone back there. we have to look at the positive side. DJ and Lydia back in the studio really appreciate that. I was going to raise a flag for the Astros. You know what? My flag gets raised. Mariners. Thanks for having us this week.
Yes.
It's been great.
This
love having Jerry DePoto on. They're inviting you guys to do some play-by-play with them in the booth.
That's great.
Well, you might just be talking. You might not
be
doing play-by-play.
Yeah.
But that'll be cool on Thursday, fourth inning. Let's go. And, yeah, thanks for having us.
Sunlight, which we don't see often in old Seattle town.
Yeah, I feel like my vitamin D is going through the roof, and I really needed that. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
It is Danny and Gallant, the professor. John Clayton, he's coming up next. Thanks to DJ, to Lydia, especially for their patience and help today. Lydia, Paul, myself. He is Paul Gallant, and he was probably premature in his declaration about his proficiency with sunscreen.
Well, listen, it's only been one day, and he is Danny O'Neill, and I'm not going to let you go anywhere near my sunscreen, sir. You stay away from that. So long, farewell. You'll hear from us tomorrow.
I'm really good at somehow not getting sunburnt despite being pasty. I do apply sunscreen quite liberally,